Hare Krishna everyone, please welcome to today's class. So let's briefly summarize what we discussed last class. So Krishna is now detailing in 6th chapter the details of how to practice Ashtanga Yoga, right? Now he is telling about the sitting procedure and he is telling about how to meditate. So we covered verses from 10, right? Yeah, 10 to 16 last time. So can we just briefly summarize what we discussed and some of the points? So what did we? What is the take home from the procedure of Ashtanga Yoga process? What's the essence we took home?
It's very difficult.
Very difficult in this day and age.
Yeah. And there is some parallels that we can compare with Ashtanga Yoga to Bhakti Yoga.
Like in the sense. How we can achieve the same thing Bhakti Yoga, you mean?
Okay. Like renunciation, when we talk about renunciation, then how we renunciate in Bhakti Yoga.
Those things. So essentially, even though Krishna is talking about Ashtanga Yoga, Srila Prabhupada in the purport is putting that in the context of Bhakti Yoga. What does it mean for a Krishna conscious devotee? And he always says a Bhakti Yogi is already, or a Bhakta is already a Yogi. Many times he says, you know, he's already achieving the supreme. So he makes that a point and he says actually he's a topmost yogi. Then, so the procedure is very difficult in this day and age. Right? We have to, and what is the, there are so many details about even the sitting place, the place to be chosen. You know, it has to not to be too high, too low. It has to be clean. It has to be a secluded place, it should not be among people. So these are not at all practical in these days. So what is a practical procedure for this age? Sankirtana. Hare Krishna Sankirtana, which is the chanting the holy names of the Lord. So then continuing.
Two aspects of the six required aspects of Sharanagati. One is to accept things in favor of Krishna and therefore to reject things in favor of Krishna.
Unfavorable to Krishna. Correct. Then, some more points anybody can share?
So, among the place to sit, it also should be holy place like Haridwar, Rishikesh.
Okay. So, what about verse number 16? Last verse we discussed.
Eating
should be too much and too less. Sleep. Everything should be regulated. Sleep should also be not be too much and too less. Okay. So anybody started changing their lifestyle?
In 13 and 14 we talked about Bhakti school and Dhyan and Yogi. So for Dhyan and Dhyan, the prerequisite is to observe celibacy.
That's very good point.
Bhakti school, they start doing, you know, Krishna
service,
practicing, but, and then automatically
lose the taste. That's very nice because of the potency of the bhakti process. That's people, even though attached to sense gratification, they are encouraged to take it up. Bhakti yoga, even because, you know, eventually they will lose the taste. That's a very good point we discussed. So any more points about 16? So what is one of the points we discussed about fasting also, right? What's the point about fasting?
It should not be capricious, it should not be something that...
Whimsical. We make it up. Okay, Monday I feel like it, I'll fast. It's not like that, it's based on acharyas and however, you know, how it's recommended in the scriptures. Okay, then sleeping should probably be 6 hours, not more than that. Otherwise, it's ignorance. But you know, we can do according to our capacity and what our bodily needs are, age and things like that. Idea is to minimize our bodily needs, so we can do according to what our capacity and abilities are. Okay, so we can continue with today's section then, text number 17. This also continues with the same theme of how to meditate. Again, some more points about regulation and day-to-day practice, which it's applicable to us also very much. So, we'll read the verse. Yuktahara viharasya yukta chetasya karmasu yukta svapna bodhasya yoga bhavati dukkha. He who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Again, Krishna is talking about one has to be regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation, okay, let's see what it is, and work. You know, all the works we do for earning our living. Then one can mitigate the material pains by practicing the yoga system. So that in that case one doesn't need to incur any misery if one is regulated. So it can just some thoughts. So what do we mean by regulation in eating? Generally?
Prasadam.
Eating only prasadam. So the quality of it, which is prasadam, and also quantity, right? Not too much, not overeating. What about sleeping? We discussed earlier.
Six hours,
not too much, not too little. Recreation? That we don't know yet, right? So, and work. Regulation in work. So, what generally ideas, what does it mean usually?
Should open work? Should we work from morning to night?
Yeah. It should not be over endeavor with respect to work also, you know, trying to get position, prestige or money, you know, acquiring all this. It should not just for a bit, bodily maintenance and some future for, you know, children and things like that. And of course, you know, everybody has to speak to themselves. What is their balance? What do they need versus, you know, what do they need to have a mental composure in order to practice Krishna consciousness. In one of the lectures, Srila Prabhupada was telling, we should have material environment, everything very peaceful. Like, you know, very, we have job, we have money to take care, day-to-day food coming in, the children are properly schooled and everything. It should be very peaceful, but at the same time, that is not all in all. No, just make it peaceful so that you can practice for the ultimate goal. No, don't miss the point. It's not that you keep working day to day to just keep it always making it peaceful and then, you know, just get caught up in that making it peaceful, but you miss the whole point of, you know, why you are doing it in the first place. So anything you want to share, both of you? You had some discussion?
I always tell him, like, how kids are, this thing is time kind of like, there's no point. Like, I mean, like, sometimes we realize after doing it, right? So, both of us realize.
No point in what?
No point in working from morning to night. Because, like, this thing. So,
and also, you should. No, sorry, make a point.
So, and whatever in the work front, we can.
Car?
Oh, I parked.
You parked?
Yeah, I parked.
Oh, can you park behind our car? No.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can do that.
Sorry. It's upstairs, very friendly person. Muslims. Yeah. Whenever something happens, he knocks and tells, is it your car? Door is open. Very nice. Okay.
Even at work, it's like there's no point chasing after something because. If you are kind of worried about certain circumstance at work, you try to avoid it. It just follows you. You change something, but the same situation happens that job something. So there's no point chasing that. So there's no point chasing after things. So be in a place and whatever happens there, and just go through it.
Yeah. That's a very good point, actually. This reminds me of the point which I heard. It says that wherever you go, your forehead goes with you. It's like, you know, we try to avoid situations or, you know, issues or things like that. But somehow, wherever we change the situation, we will end up with the same. Same thing applies to devotional service also. Like, you know, practically, if you want to think about it, like, especially in dealing with devotees, we have certain anarthas. So Krishna puts certain situations in order to bring that out and clean that out. Like, you know, maybe, you know, false ego or we are arrogant about certain thing or attached to certain thing. Some more situation happens that you have to deal with it, you know, you have to somehow let go, or you know, face to face, oh, I have ego, I'm not able to handle. So that situations will come. Sometimes it becomes too much, you know, we feel like, oh, maybe I should stop talking to this person, or, you know, I should shift my room at work, or we try so many things. What our mentor told us, whatever you try, unless you pass that test, just very, maybe after a few months or something later, you'll end up in the same situation. Better learn how to, you know, deal with it in a very Krishna conscious way, that you pass the test and, you know, become mature and realize through that, so that next time when you face a test, it's not again starting the same game and, you know, dealing with the same thing. So it's like something day to day, you know, we can see it happening.
And there's also, you know, the expectations with, it's not just work. Right? Once, as you said, once you reach, it's in every part of your life, you moderate your expectations, right? And if your children are, you know,
already
once you educate
settled.
Them and this and that, and then, you know, don't be stressed out about various things.
Yeah.
You know, you have to learn, because you don't control everything.
Yes, yes, exactly. Main thing is actually, you know, in these cases, detachment. That's what later on Krishna says. Krishna, Arjuna says, you know, it's the after explaining all this Ashtanga Yoga process, Arjuna says the process you are telling is impossible, you know, mind is so difficult to control. You know, imagine Arjuna, who is very, very well equipped, you know, very much sense controlled, and he's so, Dhananjaya, right, he's expert bowman. And he is telling, you know, at that age, you know, just Krishna is present, imagine, he's telling it's impossible for me to follow this process. And then what to speak of all of us, you know, we can't even attempt to, with our, you know, teeny brains and our, you know, our abilities and qualification, we can't even attempt to do that. So then Krishna says, you know, do it, it's possible if you constant practice and detachment. These are the two steps he gives, you know, two keys. Constant practice and detachment. So constantly you work on it, endeavor. At the same time, it's not like you keep on hanging to attachments. And still making practice, then you are not making progress. So slowly, let go. So then you start moving forward. These are the two very important, you know, points. This comes later on, we'll discuss at that point. So we'll read this wonderful purport from Srila Prabhupada.
You said constant
practice and detachment. So,
yeah. Extravagance in the matter of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, which are demands of the body, can block advancement in the practice of yoga. As far as eating is concerned, it can be regulated only when one is practiced to take and accept prasadam, sanctified food. Lord Krishna is offered, according to the Bhagavad Gita, vegetables, flowers, fruits, grains, milk, etc. In this way, a person in Krishna consciousness becomes automatically trained not to accept food not meant for human consumption or not in the category of goodness.
Okay, we can pause this. So about eating, Krishna Prabhupada is talking about eating only prasadam, and also he specifies, this is a verse in 9:26. Krishna specifies what are the foods he accepts. Patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam. No, these are the, you know, fruit. Somebody may say, okay, I'll offer wine to Krishna or meat to Krishna, right? So Krishna specifies what he wants. So these are the things we'll offer to Krishna. Then next, continuing with sleeping.
As far as sleeping is concerned, a Krishna conscious person is always alert in the discharge of his duties in Krishna consciousness, and therefore any unnecessary time spent sleeping is considered a great loss.
You can pause there. So very important, right? So because of, owing to his devotion to Lord, owing to his attachment to the Lord, he feels, you know, why did I waste this minute? Why did I sleep extra half an hour? Did anybody ever speak like that so far? You felt like that? Okay.
Theoretically, yes, but practically
you
still have to
work. You still have to. I heard that Praveen Prabhu says sometimes, no, I wasted my time sleeping. No, it's a very good, if you have that realization, no, that we are conscious of Krishna. Of course, one thing is we cannot completely, you know, avoid sleeping at all, because to maintain this body, we need some amount of sleep to give it rest and also to regenerate for the next day. At least right now, based on our consciousness we have. But actually, if we are very, very Krishna conscious, we don't need that much. This realization I had earlier, or this analysis I made, is that basically materially if you do things, they squeeze the energy out, or rather, you know, we get very tired, or we lose the energy, we get very tired. But if you do things spiritually, then it energizes us, you know, it gives a lot of energy to us, and it basically revitalizes us. So more and more, as we become more and more Krishna conscious, our material things, or you know, indulgence in matter, everything reduces. Then we indulge more and more in Krishna conscious activities, which energizes us. Then we don't require so much sleep, because the body is now, you know, very much vitalized. It always wants to serve Krishna. No, of course it comes over a period of time. That's what we noticed ourselves when we started attending Mangalarti. Those things automatically, we somehow, you know, 1.5 hours reduced sleep we could manage throughout. No, it happened because we are increasing the spiritual thing, because of the potency and because of the taste and because of the energy we get from that, we can sustain with less amount of sleep now. So that's the thing. So no, one thing is to practice reducing the sleep. Other thing is to increase certain activity which you really like. If you like, let's say attending Mangalarti, or you like chanting, or you like reading, increase that in your day. Then you have to find some time somewhere. Already everybody's schedule is full. Then you feel, oh, really want to read Bhagavad Gita. I really want to do. So what should I do? Oh, let me sleep maybe 15 minutes less. Automatically, you know, it happens.
I felt that way, Mataji. If you have a taste, it's very easy to reduce the sleep or whatever.
Yeah.
If you have a taste of.
Yes.
Same for a material thing. If you like pub, you will somehow manage your work and you will just go to that pub or disco, whatever.
Yeah. So actually, this reminds me of a point Srila Prabhupada was telling in the lecture. He was telling everything people are doing these days, working, everything, it's all because of family attachment. Because of family attachment, to maintain the family, man has to go to work to maintain the family, you know, to take care of children, education, marriage, all those things. That's the driving force that anybody is working these days. So, and Prabhupada is saying this family attachment is so strong that a man can get up at 4 o'clock, you know, and take shower, everything, and get ready and drive for 2-3 hours. My Prabhu was saying, in his work, somebody gets up at 3:30, comes to office at 6 o'clock. Seattle, he drives 2-3 hours from different city or state or somewhere. She comes so that she can beat the traffic in the morning, and comes at 6 o'clock at work and goes again at 2:30, she goes back. So much austerity we can do just for work, because we know work is going to give money to maintain my family, and I have so much love for my family members, I have to take care of them. And he was telling, if that attachment we have for Krishna, we can get up for that time and attend Mangalarti and chant 16 rounds. Right? But we don't have that attachment. If we say, you know, for Krishna you do the same thing, we cannot do. Right? We cannot do. But if we say, you know, for family, no, now we are forced, we have 7 o'clock meeting, or we have a training, you know, you have to get up in a different city, you have to attend a training, you have to come at 7 o'clock, somehow we are able to do.
This is worse, Mataji, at least family. I used to get up for cricket at 4:30 in the morning in India. My father used to yell at me, saying that, you know, for studies you don't get up for this.
Yeah.
So,
in one of the lectures I was hearing, Mataji, that it helps to write down why you want to get up in the morning. So, the example that you were giving, probably that person got habituated to the whole aspect of getting up in the morning, going to work. So initially it would have been definitely very difficult, but since she got into the groove, it became easier. Because she had a purpose in mind, so immediately at 4 o'clock, whenever she puts alarm, she's reminded of that. So one of the lectures I was hearing that you should list down all the good things that you can achieve by sleeping 1 hour less. And because I've noticed a lot of times, whenever I have a meeting in the morning, I immediately get up at 4 o'clock, I check my emails to see whether I got what I was waiting for. Right? I read that email and I go back to sleep. But if I can read something that will remind me of the fact that there are a lot of things that I can achieve when I get up 1 hour before, right? That remembrance would help us not snooze our alarm.
Yeah.
But I mean, if we can write down before sleeping, one of the lectures I was
that's
right. It helped me personally.
Yeah.
Whenever I wanted to get up, if I write down.
Yeah. That's the same point, that lecture I was telling about the laziness, procrastination, right? Vaisheshika Prabhu was telling.
So many places.
Before we sleep, we should make up the things we need to do for next day. We should make a list and keep it ready, you know. These are the things, I'm going to get up, I'm going to chant my rounds, I'm going to read Bhagavatam, I'm going to read Bhagavad Gita, I'm going to go to work and come back and make a plan for tomorrow. Before making the plan, don't even go to bed. Then when you get up, immediately, okay, now I have to do this. This service, this service.
In plan, the advantages that you get by executing all those tasks.
Yeah.
How it would make you feel, because
yeah.
now you're all surcharged, right? I mean,
yeah.
If you can capture these moments, and you know, I'm going to feel so good about myself.
Yeah.
Right, that I'm attending Mangal Aarti or chanting. I feel really good about myself, right?
Mm.
So all those feelings, if you can somehow capture it when you read it in the morning,
yeah.
oh, this is brilliant. At least some remembrance.
Yeah.
It helps to reduce the likes and dislikes, because if you keep like, this is what I'm going to do, whether you like it or not, so the dislike of getting up early, it kind of reduces, because that like and dislike reduces. So I feel sometimes like I don't like to do something, but I feel that that's my duty or whatever mm-hmm. I like to do. So my like and dislike kind of reduces a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So that also
yeah. yeah. Slowly we have to come out from this, you know, essential platform where, you know, what is pleasing to our senses and what is not, to, you know, mode of goodness and mode of, you know, platform of duty and later on platform of love for a spiritual master or Krishna. No, that could be, you know, main motivation for us. It has been like, you know, if I get a pearly chant my rounds nicely, my spiritual master will be very pleased with me. So immediately when I alarm rings, I remember, oh, okay, you know, if I do this, it's going to please him. So let me just immediately raise me up. So, you know, that's one motivation. Very nice. Okay, so we continue with this.
Avyartha Kalatvam. A Krishna conscious person cannot bear to pass a minute of his life without being engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, his sleeping is kept to a minimum. His ideal in this respect is Srila Rupa Goswami, who was always engaged in the service of Krishna and who could not sleep more than 2 hours a day. And sometimes not even that. Thakura Haridasa would not even accept prasadam, nor even sleep for a moment without finishing his daily routine of chanting with his beads 300,000 names.
Yeah, we can pause there. So it's very nice. Now, these are very, very advanced Vaishnavas. You know, these are our acharyas. They're setting an example, showing, you know, how to be engaged in Krishna consciousness and reduce our bodily, you know, need, necessities. Of course, we cannot imitate them, so we can follow their mood of, you know, wherever we are at, how we can minimize more and how we can increase our Krishna consciousness more. So, you know, Thakur Haridas also, you know, he had a, all these acharyas, another important point is they had a count of what they are going to do. They have a, like, you know, 100,000 times I am going to bow to Vaishnavas every day. So many thousand times I am going to chant Hare Krishna mantra. They have a count. It's not like, you know, sometimes we chant without the counter, we chant without the beats and say, oh, I'm chanting all day. No, that's not at all advisable. No, we should keep the count of our, you know, chanting, we should keep the count. Nama Purvaka, the song, right, in Krishna Kirtanena, the song of Sadgoswami Ashtakam, it's given, you know, they count and they do their devotional activities.
So why do we have to count though?
It's, I don't know, yeah, I don't know why, but it's not only in Vaisheshika Prabhu's class also, but laziness, he was telling, you know, this important point of having a measure, not only quality, it's a quantity wise also. You have a bar you have to meet, basically. Otherwise, it's, you know, you don't have, it's flexible, right? You can do anything. One day I can do, one day I cannot do also.
It's like what Mataji, matrix. You do what you are measured by, right?
Yeah.
So
you get what you have accomplished, right? You are promoted or whatever, based on what you have accomplished. You cannot say, okay, I'm coming 8 hours, I'm doing something here. No, give me the awards. They want the results. So Krishna, devotees want to be accountable to Krishna. I can, at the end of the day, I can say, okay, I've chanted 16 rounds. If I'm not even using my counter, how can I say I've chanted my 16 rounds to anybody? Right? How can I say to myself? Also.
And I was learning in one of the lectures, it was mentioned that it is easier to make yourself more disciplined. So if you don't have a counter, then there is no way you can be disciplined yourself, right? You cannot, you wouldn't be able to make a steady progress. And acharyas also are hearing in that lecture, they don't have to maintain counts. Like,
yeah, they don't have to maintain.
They are always remembering Krishna. For them, it doesn't matter whether they are maintaining count or not. But to set an example for all of us.
Right, to be able to get there.
Yeah, yeah. So because if they don't set a standard, if you say 8 hours, keep chanting. Hare Krishna, yeah, I'm coming. That is also, the time is gone, you're not chanting 8 hours. So there is nothing for you to be disciplined, right? 8 hours, first day you are enthusiastic, you would chant 800 names, and next day it will drop to 400 names, and you still tell yourself that I'm chanting 8 hours. So, I mean, that's what I was hearing one of his interviews.
Yeah, to have a standard for ourselves, you know, some bar, minimum bar. Okay, Krishna, I'm going to do this much to you. Whatever is our bar. So then continuing.
As far as work is concerned, a Krishna conscious person does not do anything which is not connected with Krishna's interest, and thus his work is always regulated and is untainted by sense gratification. Since there is no question of sense gratification, there is no material leisure for a person in Krishna consciousness. And because he is regulated in all his work, speech, sleep, wakefulness and all other bodily activities, there is no material misery for him.
So regarding work, what Prabhupada is saying, we work only for Krishna. So at the same time, you know, for Krishna we can over-endeavor. There is no limit for that. So that's the point, you know. Prabhupada never said, he didn't say, okay, work means we do only 8 hours. He didn't say all those things. He's saying, just whatever it is, we just do for Krishna. And there is no sense gratification, because we want to give the results to Krishna. Another important point about recreation, what did Srila Prabhupada say? There is no material leisure represent Krishna consciousness. So that means idea. No, there is no recreation actually. No, but the thing is, it's not like we take a break from a devotional service and go for a retreat and just, you know, swim there. Or that's not the way we devotees, or you know, at least the serious devotees do. But the recreation for us is a change of service. Let's say, you know, okay, I'm doing old chanting, or maybe old like cooking for some festival or something. If I want to take a break, then I just go chant. Or maybe I'll just hear a kirtan or something. That's a recreation, change of service. Or actually, practically, you know, we can do walking. Walking is very good for health. We have to maintain our health also in order to keep the vehicle up and running for serving Krishna. So walking and swimming is also a sporting mode of goodness. These are also recommended. So we don't take a break from service, but we change the service. Right? And another thing, Baladev Vidya Bhushana, he was saying that a devotee has to also regulate his speaking ability. So one statement I heard is that one should preach always and speak less. One should preach always, but speak less, or speak only when, you know, whenever is necessary. So what does that mean?
Don't talk unnecessarily.
Then how do you preach? How do you preach? Yeah, so we preach by our example, our actions. But usually initial stages preaching, we think, you know, we have to talk, we have to tell somebody so many things about Bhagavad Gita, like that. But we can preach by actions and speak only when it's needed and necessary, you know, when it's important. So speaking, restricting, regulating speaking also means we don't speak unnecessary stuff about politics or games or things which are just materially motivated and which just take us away from Krishna. But we speak things related to Krishna, which will hopefully remember others about Krishna, and which are enlivening to everyone, which inspires everyone to come to Krishna, closer to Krishna, and which are favorable, which are palatable, which are truthful. So all these things. But sometimes we can use harshness if it helps the other person to take it up seriously. So yesterday we had a program and we were discussing, we changed the theme. It was a bhajan night, so we sang some bhajans and we were discussing about appreciation. So we were thinking, well, let's appreciate each other. We were sharing each other, you know, what qualities we like in each other and things which we inspire about and all these things. So then some devotees are sharing, you know, Mataji, you are very strict, and they are telling me. So I was first time I think I heard this. So then, but then they told, like, you know, oh, but your strictness, we like it, because it shows that, you know, you care for us. Because of our welfare, you are trying to tell certain things, so that, and you tell it strictly so we can take it seriously and take it up. So that's good. Now somebody may say, oh, she's always strict, you know, she's very tough or something. Then take it negatively. But if it's favorable for Krishna, that's very good. Okay. So we'll continue. Next verse, text number 18. Yadha viniyatam chittam atmane eva vastite nisprha sarva kamebhyo yukta iti ucyate tatha. When the yogi, by practice of yoga, disciplines his mental activities and becomes situated in transcendence, devoid of all material desires, he is said to be well established in yoga. So here, from now on, there is a description of perfect stage of Ashtanga Yoga. Like the one who reached the topmost stage, what all he experiences. So he is already situated in transcendence. And he disciplines his mental activities devoid of all material desires. And he is well established in yoga. We'll just read first paragraph and then.
Ordinary person by cessation from all kinds of material desires, of which six is the chief. A perfect yogi is so well disciplined in the activities of the mind that he can no longer be disturbed by any kind of material desires. This perfectional stage can automatically be attained by persons in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, we can pause this. So basically, Srila Prabhupada described what this mean. What does it mean? Yogi means, he is reiterating, he ceases from all material desires. It doesn't mean we come and attend some yoga, this thing, and keep on indulging in our activities. And he's also saying this stage is automatically attained by person Krishna consciousness. Again reiterating how Bhakti Yogi is achieving this state already. And that is by engaging all our senses in Krishna service. So Srila Prabhupada is quoting these verses from Bhagavatam, where Ambarish Maharaj engages himself all different kinds of senses in Krishna service. We covered this earlier, right? In which chapter? Second chapter. This same description comes about. So we'll skip that. So I'll just ask a quiz question. So how do we engage our tongue?
Eating
prasadam.
Singing.
Yeah, in specifically Ambarish Maharaj, it says tasting the tulsi leaf offered to the Lord. Okay, how about nose? Smelling the flowers from the Lord.
Okay.
And what about feet?
Okay.
We had exam also, right? On this? Okay. So we'll read the last paragraph.
This transcendental stage may be inexpressibly subjectively by the followers of the impersonalist path, but it becomes very easy and practical for a person in Krishna consciousness, as is apparent in the above description of the engagement of Maharaja Ambarish. Unless the mind is fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord by constant remembrance, such transcendental engagements are not practical. In the devotional service of the Lord, therefore, these prescribed activities are called archana, or engaging all the senses in the service of the Lord. The senses and the mind require engagements. Simple by
abnegation
is not practical.
We can pause it. Okay. The same thing again Prabhupada is telling, we have to fix our mind on the lotus feet of Krishna by engaging all the senses in the service of Krishna. Simply stopping them, it's not practical. Everything needs engagement. We have to engage them in a positive way. So in that lecture Prabhupada was telling about attachment, family attachment lecture. So everybody has attachment, so all we have to do is transfer that attachment to Krishna. That's what we need to do. Somehow transfer that attachment to Krishna and his devotees, then slowly we can make progress.
Hello? Hi.
So that's what we are trying to do, by trying to slowly engage ourselves in service to Krishna. Slowly we are developing that attachment for Krishna. Actually, initially it's very easy. Krishna is far away, or maybe for others it may be different. It's easy to develop attachment to devotees first. Krishna, okay, at least theoretically we think we have attachment, so we are trying to develop. But if we can develop attachment to devotees or spiritual master, that comes long way in our process. Because we can perceive them immediately, right? We can see them, we can see how they react if we do it nicely, how they are pleased, how they encourage us, and how, they bless us. So there is immediate reciprocation with them. So if we can, initial stages, we can develop attachment to devotees through association, through have loving exchanges, then that will help us a lot. So So I remember one of my, you know, in my initial stages, so I was staying, I was not married at that time, I was in Bellevue and our mentors were also there in Bellevue. And then temple, they were constructing new temple or, yeah, they were constructing new temple here. So there was a temporary temple in the Redmond there. We were, I think, one and a half year while the temple is being constructed, that it was there. Then we know, everybody knew temple is going to be coming up. So many devotees started purchasing houses here nearby and started moving from there. All the devotees were there in Bellevue. We all were in one complex, opposite to each other every day, like how it is now here. It was like that. So it was very nice. So then they started moving, purchasing and mostly moving. Then one day, Sunday, I remember I was in temple and I heard my mentors, they were telling, you know, okay, we got the house, we are moving there. So I don't, in front of them, I didn't do anything, but then I just stepped out. Then I started crying. So then I didn't want to show to them, you know, like how I was feeling. But then, of course, my, you know, my mentor, he saw me. He saw me, he's like, oh, you're crying. Then he was very happy. He was smiling. I was thinking, what is this? Is this saddest or what? At least that's what I was thinking. No, why is he enjoying my misery? I was so new. It's not even six months into Krishna consciousness. Like, I was so materialistic and you can imagine from the thoughts I was having. You know, so then he said, you know, that's so nice that you have attachment to devotees. So it's so nice because it will come, you know, it will help you. If you develop this attachment to devotees that we are leaving, you are crying, that's very nice. So I could see that, of course, you know, initially it was so much pain that because I used to attend programs with them and I used to get so much inspiration from them, and now maybe it's far away and it's difficult. But later I noticed that then I got married, so I stayed there only after marriage, and we were doing programs there and they were here, all these things. But my heart was always hankering, I want to stay closer to them. So then immediately after marriage we were thinking, okay, let's purchase a house near temple, near them. So then it took some time and then we moved here. Their house is just here actually. Now they moved away from the city, but their house is here and we got in the same complex there. And then we had a lot of fun. We used to go ride the bus together and so much association, everything. And so even now it's like, you know, I always aspire to follow in their footsteps. They are my, you know, role models and things like that. So attachment to devotees takes long way. You know, it helps us so much. So regarding that, so actually I was requesting them because since 2 years they moved, and I also, because of the kids, I never met our spiritual master, also them. So I was requesting them, why don't you, they come here. So at least they promised they are going to come this Thanksgiving here and hopefully stay with us. So I don't know what's, they are very, very, so much into services. They don't know their schedule, anytime it can change. I'm praying that they could come. So if they come, I was thinking we'll arrange a program where, because I've told so many times about them. So I was thinking maybe you all will be eager to meet them, and, you know, I wanted them to share their experiences and teach maybe the class. So, you know, I can hear from them. I'm so eager to waiting. So let's see. But Thanksgiving, I don't know how many of you will be here. We'll see all these things. So how it works out. Okay. So then text number 19. यथा दीपो निमतास्तो नेकते सोपमास्मृता योगिनो यत चित्तस्य जिर्जतो योगमात्मना. As the lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist whose mind is controlled always remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendental self. So very nice analogy Krishna is giving. Lamp in a windless place doesn't waver, it doesn't get disturbed, right? There's no wind to agitate the lamp. So similarly now, the mind of a controlled transcendentalist, it's always steady in his meditation, so it doesn't get disturbed. It's fixed in his worshipable object. For a Ashtanga yogi, it's a super soul, but for a Bhakti yogi, it's Krishna, no, Bhagavan. So very small purport.
A truly Krishna-conscious person always observed in transcendence, in constant, undisturbed meditation on his worshipable Lord. He is as steady as a lamp in the windless place.
Hmm. Yeah. All these symptoms are similar to, you know, Sthitagir Muni in text second chapter, right? Arjuna asks about what are the symptoms of a transcendentalist. Right? Remember, there is a series of verses. Krishna speaks about, you know, his
how he walks,
all those things. So this is, these are also similar, but now these are in the context of Ashtanga Yogi, but those are for devotees, you know, or any transcendentalist. Okay, so now continue then, next verse. Next, actually, three verses are together, 20 to 23. Yatro paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chaivatman atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati sukham atyantikam yatta buddhi prahyam adindriyam vetti yatrana chaivayam sitas chalati tatpata yam labdhva chaparam labam manyate nadikam tata yasvin sitona dukkena kuruna pivichalyayate tam vidya dukkha samyoga viko yogam yoga samhitam. So how, what does he experience in that situated in transcendent, no, in transcendental platform? What is his experience? He's already situated in transcendence. That means he's Brahman realized. So when he's Brahman realized, what does he feel? You know, how does he experience things? That is in this verse. So in the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. So essentially, he realizes himself and he is self-situated. He is self-satisfied. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. So his transcendental senses are awakened and he is experiencing transcendental happiness in service of the Lord. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Wow, so many things he is experiencing. So he is very much undisturbed and he is situated, he is experiencing transcendental happiness in service to Krishna. So one may be surprised, actually, you know, this is what the main key thing which Srila Prabhupada's purport focuses is this point about transcendental senses and transcendental happiness. So remember this, we are discussing about Ashtanga Yogi. So he is doing all these postures, everything, asana, pranayama, all these things, and he is focusing on the super soul within. So by doing that, he will come to a stage where his transcendental senses awaken. Okay, so we have this material senses, right? All these hands, legs, but we are spirit soul. So soul also has senses, which are spiritual senses, which are meant to be engaged in Krishna service. So gradually, by using this material senses in service of the Lord, eventually you will get purified and this transcendental senses will be awakened. So that is the state he reached already. So that's why Prabhupada's major part of the purport focuses on that people usually these days, Mayavadis, when they see the super soul within, they think it's me. They say, no, I am that. I merge into the soul. They don't see, no, I'm meant to serve the soul. No, it's that for them, that's the Kaivalyam, you know, merging in the Supreme. But actually, the real Ashtanga Yogi, he serves the Supreme Lord within. Right? So, that's the thing. So, most of the purport is Prabhupada is talking about Mayavadi, you know, how this talks about the real yoga and the goal of yoga and how generally people don't do it and how in Krishna consciousness, the same thing is achieved by Cheto Darpana Marjana, as given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Clearance of the impure mirror of the mind. No, this is what this is. This is a big purport. So we are just going to concentrate on last two paragraphs, which are very, very crucial for us and devotees.
The best practice of yoga in this age is Krishna consciousness, which is not baffling. A Krishna conscious person is so happy in his occupation that he does not aspire after any other happiness. There are many impediments, especially in this age of hypocrisy, for practicing Hatha Yoga, Dhyana Yoga and Jnana Yoga. But there is no such problem in executing Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. As long as the material body exists, one has to meet the demands of the body, namely eating, sleeping, defending and mating. But a person who is in pure Bhakti Yoga or Krishna consciousness does not arouse the senses while meeting the demands of the body. Rather, he accepts the bare necessities of life, making the best use of a bad bargain, and enjoys transcendental happiness in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, we can pause then. So, Prabhupada, in the first paragraph, he said, Krishna conscious person is so happy in his occupation that he does not aspire after any other happiness. So we don't want to, we'll end up in a state where we are not seeking anything. Not seeking anything outside. So, we just want to serve Krishna more and more, and maybe it's a different variety of service, maybe in a different setting. But it's not like, you know, okay, I just want money, I want, you know, clothes, I want all these things, you know, we just get away from all this business, and it's so much relief actually. When we come to that stage, it's so peaceful and so nice. So we just aspire for more and more service and different types of service and just increasing service to Krishna. No, because we know that is the happiness we want. And he also talks about there is no problem, there are no impediments for the bhakti yoga. Whereas in, you know, for other processes there are a lot of impediments, you know, about to control mind and all those things. And next he talks about how to maintain bodily necessities, just bare minimum. So it's a very important point. He's saying a devotee, while maintaining meeting the demands of the body, he just accepts bare necessities, but he doesn't arouse the senses. No, it's not like we inflame the senses. No, just try to, you know, somehow satisfy them, just keep them calm, just give them little food, but not like, you know, agitate them. You know, especially, for example, this means like, especially going to the places which can agitate them. Like, for example, if you just go to a place as bar or pub going, or a Friday night going to, let's say, downtown, people drinking and walking and all, immediately it stirs something in us, like, rather than going to a temple at that time, right? There is a different effect. Immediately we start thinking about all these things and we feel, oh, I wish, oh, I used to do this. At least we remember past. I used to do this with my friends in my college. And we used to, Friday night, we used to go out for movies. Something reminds us. It arouses the senses. But rather, you know, just keep cool and, you know, just be in association nicely and just maintain Krishna consciousness. The next part is very important, very nice. He is callous.
He is callous towards incidental occurrences such as accidents, disease, scarcity, and even the death of a most dear relative. But he is always alert to execute his duties in Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga. Accidents never deviate him from his duty. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Agamo Paino Nityas Tams Tadikshasva Bharata. Agama Paino. He endures all such incidental occurrences because he knows that they come and go and do not affect his duties. In this way, he achieves the highest perfection in yoga practice.
Wow. This is too heavy. Heavy for us to take at this level, right?
So for us, it's okay, Mataji. Personally, we can take, you know, it's okay to you being an accident, you get a disease. So the death of a loved one, that's...
Yeah.
See, it's... You're just trying to start the path and there, the goal is somewhere so far off, and when they show us, we feel more disheartened than, at least I feel more disheartened than I feel, oh, I have to get there. It's like, oh man, it's so far off this one. See, I was telling you about my cousin who passed away. She was born on the same day as me. See, she was born like 2 hours earlier. So, you know, when something happens like that, it's so difficult to say, okay, no, that's just a soul. You know, even like Prabhu was there, or Lavanya Mataji was there, who said, hey, you know, remember all this. It was okay. Otherwise, it's great stumbling blocks there. Personally, something happens, I don't care. I was in an accident, I was happy, I was fine. But something happens to whom you like and whom you love, you know, it becomes very difficult to overcome that. At least for me, it's very difficult to overcome. So when something like this is stated, you know, you have to be callous. That's rather too difficult for me to even handle.
Yeah. So the thing is, that's why, you know, that's one of the first principle which Krishna tells to Arjuna, right? Matra sparshastu kaunteya sitosha. You know, this happiness, distress, heat and cold, they come and go as seasons. Of course, you know, I'm also speaking to as much theoretical as you know you're speaking, but I'm repeating the Shastra, you know, trying to repeat the Shastra for all of our benefit. So, no. So he says, just try to tolerate. These things keep coming, going. Main thing is, callous means he's not hard-hearted. He's not like, you know, I don't care. That's the point. No, it's not, I don't care if, you know, something happens to my family. Let's say I was telling the other day, no, my wife is sick. She's not able to cook. It doesn't mean, oh, your soul, you know, just continue. It's not like that, you know. Just continue your spirit soul. Why are you bothering, you know, they saying you're having a headache. We are not like that, you know. We are human. At the end of the day, we are human beings and we are meant to, you know, love each other and care for each other. That's the point yesterday I was sharing. It's like, we are, this is a very important point, if you can register this. We are actually acting as transparent via media or representative of Krishna's love for our family members. Krishna's love for our family members comes through us. Got the point?
Mm-hmm.
Krishna wants to love them, let's say. You know, my child. Krishna wants to love my child. How is he going to do? Through me he's going to do. He's going to empower me to give all the abilities to love the child. That is Krishna's love towards the child. So if I am, let's say, in a bad mood, I didn't sleep properly and I'm not able to do that love, I'm not really acting like that instrument. Somehow I'm being a block in Krishna's love for him. No, that's why, you know, if my wife, you know, my husband is sick or something like that, you know, Krishna wants to give that love to that person so that he can be encouraged to practice Krishna consciousness. So we have to do whatever is necessary to care for that wife at that moment, or such that, you know, there is love and, you know, care, affection, everything. There is end of the day, that's why, you know, bhakti has to make our heart soft more and more. Not hard, you know. It's like, you know, now I'm doing yoga process, I'm doing, you know, okay, after chant 16 hours, nobody disturb me. Whatever happens if the child is sick, it doesn't matter, you know, I have to chant my 16 hours. It's not like that, you know. We are very, very, it is, that's why, you know, flexibility is one of the qualities Krishna likes very much in devotees, which I learned in a hard way. So it's meant to make us very, very soft. So in that regard, okay, I think I'm missing the point. So in that regard, look, we are not becoming hard-hearted, but at the same time, we know what is the, okay, so how do I help that person now? Now we know it's a soul, okay, theoretically I know, and I know there is a pain in my heart because of the relationship with that person. Okay, how can I help the person? If I can become more Krishna conscious, then my prayers are effective. If I'm more sincere, more determined, Krishna can listen to my prayers, so then I can help that person. So that's why you become more determined. It's like, okay, now I've seen the goal, so let me perfect my life. So that way I can help, because I mentioned earlier, right? If at all we become pure devotee, Krishna, it is said that 10 generations before, 10 generations after are delivered already. Krishna says, because they're related to you, I'm going to take care of them. The Bhakta Prahlad story. So that's the best service we can do to everyone. So that's why he's very fixed up. Actually, I remember one... I'm remembering one of the incidents Srila Prabhupada had. So Srila Prabhupada is going in a car somewhere, I don't know the place and everything, and it's on the road. There was a huge accident, lot of people gathered, and it's lot of very ghastly accident, all the blood everywhere. And so all the devotees in the car, of course, the car couldn't navigate, right? So they were all looking and like so shocked, and like, oh, they were making sighs and like, oh, this happened, that happened, so much all this. The Prabhupada was just chanting, no, on his beats. Then he just said, no, just turn that side and just go, continue. And all the devotees were surprised, you know, what, is he not, Prabhupada doesn't care about all these things? Or what does it mean? No, is he cares, but he cares in a... Already accident happened, everything. What's the point in, you know, indulging in that and discussing? Of course, we can get lessons that, you know, it's all temporary and everything. But he's focused on his duty, you know. The best way I can serve the world is by my being fixed up in Krishna consciousness and by my preaching services. So he's just fixed in that. It's not like, you know, I don't care about this person, he's dead. He knows he's dead, okay, he's praying for him. Okay, let's continue my services. Let's continue my... This, you know, it's very hard, like, you know, I can't imagine if something happens to my child, how will I, you know, react? It's, you know, but we will be faced with all this, tests, you know, all these things which we are theoretically learning, we are being faced with these situations, and we'll be forced, in order to take up Krishna consciousness, in order to stick to the path, we'll be forced to take up the test and pass them. Otherwise, we will not be able to take it up. I was telling one example, right, on Mataji. She had so many health issues. I was telling one day, one lecture, one class, right? She has so many health issues. Whenever I see, actually, she gets more and more health issues. It becomes more and more complicated. And she's so Krishna conscious and so advanced and so determined in her practices. So I was thinking, why it happens like that? She's so dear, so wonderful example for everyone. Why she has to go through all these things? Then I was telling, it's amazing. I was telling, amazing. You're setting such an example that despite all these things, you are never leaving Krishna's lotus feet. You're never even thinking of giving up. Such an example you're setting. Then she's telling, what choice do I have? What else can we go other than Krishna? Where else can we go? That's the shelter. We know Krishna consciousness is the alternative for everything. Somehow or the other, we have to stay alive in this. Whatever happens in our life, we cannot say, okay, now Krishna is bad, or Krishna is giving all these problems. He is not loving me. Jump him and just go. What will we do? We go somewhere. Where will we go? Right? So we'll be faced with the situations, different situations that we are forced to become more Krishna consciousness and face the challenges and apply this and realize them. If we are sincere. So somebody was telling I was hearing this lecture that we are Krishna's children. Krishna has lot of love and the wealth to share with us because he owns the kingdom, right? So we are his sons, so naturally father wants to share his wealth with his children. So it's ready, it's just waiting there. Only thing is, we just have to be alive. We should just be alive in Krishna consciousness, just to ready to receive it. Because it's not going to come today or tomorrow, right? It's going to come. As Prabhupada said, it takes 40 years to perfect chanting. So it's going to come. But we should somehow or the other, it said, just stay alive. Just keep chanting, just stay in association of devotees. It seems now very easy, but it may come to the point sometime, it's almost impossible to keep up faith in Krishna consciousness. We may end up in such situations. Those cases, as I said, good times are the preparation for bad times. We invest in our times when it's good, when our health is good, when our family is cool and we have job, everything, such that when we don't have job, when we don't have good health, we can sustain those days. That practically, Prabhu was sharing this realization, with two kids, especially boys, many people told when I was carrying only, you're going to have a hard time, all this. We didn't realize. We felt, okay, Krishna is giving us this service. Okay, right now I'm carrying. He's carrying me while I'm carrying. So he is going to allow me by afterwards also. He's going to give me give us the ability to take care of them. So with that faith, we went through whole thing. And later, when we had to face the real thing of taking care of them, many times stop all our chanting, very irregular and not going to Mangalati, all those things. Prabhu was sharing his realization that, the years we spent attending Mangalarti and chanting, those are the things which are helping us now to sustain. That's the realization you shared. I felt, yeah, that's true. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to. Even, maybe we would have lost our chanting, everything, just busy taking care of them. So,
it's
okay. Huh? Oh, okay. So, yeah. So I think they have come, so we'll stop here right now. Hare Krishna.